I'm bad in math. When I was in fourth grade, we moved from Iowa to California. And I'd just begun to learn my multiplication tables in Iowa, but in California, they had already mastered them. So when my new teacher looked at my grades from previous years, she placed me in the upper math class. Who knew that in fourth grade, this event would profoundly shape how I perceived my math abilities for the rest of my life? Who doesn't panic when you're called to the board to do a math problem in front of the class? Well, it's even scarier when you don't know your multiplication tables. I stood at the board, dumbfounded. I was so ashamed. Not only was I the new kid in class, I was the dumb kid in class. As the week went on, I knew that I didn't have the tools that I needed to be in this upper math class. I was too ashamed and shy to speak up to my teacher or even my parents. So instead of seeking help, one day when it was time for math, I just left. And I walked home. Being only 9, I hadn't quite thought through my escape plan. I forgot that my mom was at home. Imagine her surprise when I walked through the door in the middle of the morning. It was then that I broke down crying and I shared my shame. And in that moment of sharing, my mother listened with empathy. And then she gently brought me back to school. And we sat in the principal's office while she told my story, even crying a little bit herself. The principal and my teacher moved me into the intermediate math class, and I was given an assignment to work on flashcards at home so I could catch up. And yeah, I survived. But guess what? That scar of shame, even as small as it may seem in comparison to other terrible things in the world, it still forms me. I continued to doubt myself in math throughout all of my school years. Even today, I still freeze if someone's watching over my shoulder as I add up a column of numbers. This feeling of shame about not being good enough has sanded and shaped my own experiences and my perception of myself throughout my life. I doubt you noticed the word, my first sentence. I said, I'm bad in math. I'm bad. Dr. Brené Brown, who has studied shame, says there's a difference between shame and guilt. Guilt says, I did something bad. Shame says, I'm bad. According to Brown, shame is an unspoken epidemic and the secret behind many forms of broken behavior. It's something that's glaringly noticeable to me when I work with families and patients in hospice, especially as they're framing end-of-life stories. When I was in seminary, my pastoral care professor was profoundly interested in shame. He felt it shaped how we presented ourselves to the world. He taught us to listen carefully for evidence of shame as people unfolded their life stories. I've seen shame dig down deep into people's beings. I've seen it create cracks and a disconnect between themselves and others. Shame builds barriers that make reconnection feel difficult and sometimes even dangerous for us to try. We can become very good at acting and creating a facade or an image of ourselves because we become afraid of letting people see our inner selves. Why do we do this? Because our stories, which are usually pretty messy and imperfect, whisper to us that we're broken and that we're not enough. Brené Brown wondered about this as she began to study shame. Through countless interviews and research, she defines shame as a sense of feeling unworthy of love and unworthy of belonging. Shame is that thing that keeps us from trying something new, like Dan was explaining. That gremlin at the door that says, no, you can't. You're not good enough. I know what happened to you. I know how you grew up. Who do you think you are? How many of us struggle with those voices, especially as we compare ourselves to coworkers or relatives or friends? How many of us let those voices stop us in our tracks when new opportunities or transitions present themselves? And I wonder, How might that be different if we only understood that we're not alone in these feelings? My father was a wonderful man. I loved him dearly, but he drank too much, especially when I was in high school. Many nights were spent tiptoeing past the living room, trying hard not to catch his attention. Often he just sat quietly listening to jazz. But sometimes something would sort of set him off and he would start verbally abusing whoever happened to be unlucky enough to be in the room. My family developed all the stereotypical patterns of codependency and enabling. We worked really hard at keeping this secret. Later on in my life, when I would be asked to tell my story, I would never mention my dad's alcoholism. Shame kept me from sharing that part of my story. Shame kept me from accepting that those years even had any influence on me. I have a group of girlfriends that I've known since the seventh grade, and we still get together a couple times a year. We've seen each other through quite a bit. Ironically, it wasn't until after we graduated from college that we discovered we all had an alcoholic parent. I suspect that's why we were attracted to one another in the first place. We understood certain ways of being in the world. Slowly, we began to pull that dark side of our lives out into the light. We realized that we had hid parts of ourselves from one another all those years, because we were ashamed. Now that we've opened up to one another in honesty, we show ourselves for who we really are. This has lifted the shame that we carried about our parents for so long. Yes, shame is tough to talk about, but the conversation isn't nearly as dangerous as what we create when we try to hold something in silence and in secret. How many of you understand and have struggled with the intense pressure of shame? When we hold something like that in the dark, we can never really relax or be ourselves because we're always on the watch so that no one sees the real us. Shame gets its power from being unspeakable. If we name shame, we cut it off at its knees. Brené Brown says that empathy is the antidote to shame. By speaking openly with my friends about my dad's drinking, the shame disappeared. They understood. We had all felt many of the same feelings about our parents' drinking. By exposing it to the light, we destroyed its power over us. That's why AA and Al-Anon are so helpful. Today, when I tell my life story, I talk about my dad's drinking. Heck, I'm talking about it right now in front of all of you. And I bet that many of you have a similar story about alcoholism in your own families. By dragging these stories out into the light, we learn that our story can become a link to one another and that we have similar experiences. And suddenly, we have a new understanding of one another. And in that, there is no shame. Now I see by talking about alcoholism, I have a deeper understanding and an empathy toward these families that I serve in my work as a hospice chaplain. And when I start to hear someone share their story, and I might get a hint that there's alcoholism in the family, I quickly share about my dad. Suddenly, the shame is lifted, and the person I'm with relaxes, even smiles. Empathy says, you understand. So my stories of shame, of being bad at math or having a dad who drank too much, aren't really that terrible. Maybe you have a story that seems too impossible to share, too shameful to share. And if you do, my heart goes with you. I hope that if you hear anything at all today, it's that keeping it in the dark is much more dangerous. We only hurt ourselves when we do. I also think that the feeling of shame that our body and minds have is a way of sounding an alarm. Shame tells us that something's wrong. Keep keeping our shame in the dark allows shame to shape us and form us in ways that are really harmful. The energy it takes to keep shame in the dark is enormous. Think how wonderful and freeing it would feel to bring your shame out into the light. Empathy is the antidote to shame. Shame cannot survive empathy. And for me, empathy is a connection to one another, and that's where holiness lies and happens. How beautiful was it to hear Kelly's words? How holy was that moment when you all stood up for her? That's true courage. That's empathy. And how many of you here understood exactly what she was talking about? Because you've had those same stories in your life. Having someone empathize with us in times of struggle is always a sacred moment, because in that moment we're saying to one another, I see you for who you really are, and I accept you. This is the hard work of loving. And it's hard because shame keeps those stories hidden, and we think that there are not very many people who we can trust to accept us as we are. And this distrust brings me to the other side of shame, which goes hand in glove with feeling shame. Our shame comes from the trauma that others do to us. Often our shame can come from those who shame us. And sadly, it seems we've gone back to the days of public shaming, of placing people in public stockades where minute by minute people walk by and spit and sneer and humiliate those who've made a mistake or have had something terrible happen to them. But today, this public square is not in the middle of town. It's on our computers. It's social media. Except in this public square, no one can see the shamers. They're hidden by the screen of the computers or phones or the made-up names that hide our identity. And so it's easy to abuse and shame someone else because nobody knows it's us. And with each click to look at a humiliating YouTube video, with each click to like a negative or humiliating comment, we grow in numbers, and those numbers of comments and clicks slowly destroy someone else. Every day online, people are abused and humiliated by total strangers. Studies show that cyberbullying is up 87%, and those who are cyberbullied often experience suicide ideations. And we've heard it much too often. Another teen takes their life because online bullying and shame is too unbearable. Did you know that humiliation is felt more intensely than anger or even happiness? Let me say that again. Humiliation is felt more intensely than anger or even happiness. In the past, a small discretion or a mistake might have been seen or heard only by your small community, but today it can be sent around the world in minutes. And if there's a video or picture, well, that makes it even worse. And the fact that it's recorded for eternity makes it possible to re-humiliate someone over and over and over again. Our culture continues to grow more gossip websites, magazines, and TV shows. Reality TV shows families and so-called friends stabbing each other in the back or humiliating each other on a regular basis. A marketplace has emerged that makes money off of watching someone else's humiliation. And with each click of our mouse and with each show that we watch, we contribute to that marketplace. But here's the thing. We can make a choice, and we can make a change to this kind of behavior. Because you see, as Unitarian Universalists, if we truly believe in the inherent worth and dignity of each individual, that means all people, not just the ones we agree with politically or who are in our social circle. This means people we don't even know, people who make mistakes and say hurtful things. Because really, if we turn around and say something just as hurtful, Are we any better? Writer Anne Lamott was recently lambasted online when she posted a regrettable tweet about growing tired about everyone's praise for Bruce Jenner's transition to Caitlyn. I think the exact tweet that caused the uproar was, "I will call him a she when the PP is gone." Inappropriate? Yes. We're all learning that no one assigns us our gender identity, no matter what we look like or what we were born with. Our gender identity is our decision. A public storm of shaming rained down on Lamont. I'm sure it's because she's usually a champion of the underdog or folks on the edge. It seems so unlike her. So it was easy to click and shame her, and shame her the public square did. She issued an apology, but the voice that I felt spoke for the what was really in my heart was her own son, Sam, who said this. "I learned about trans life from a close female-to-male friend who was willing and patient to answer my ignorant and incredibly personal questions. Trans life is outside of my mom's small-town life. But this is how truth gets out. This is how we evolve. We talk about it. I know it's shocking what she said. But remember that before you knew about trans lives, you didn't know. For everyone who is intolerant of my mom's intolerance, Anne Lamont is not perfect. But the best way to teach is with love and patience. Before you knew, you didn't know." I like that. Our world is always changing, and sometimes we make mistakes. How many of us have all been in that place about one thing or another and said or done something we regret? We live in a very public arena these days, and I think it's important to be careful how we use social media. Let's not contribute to the problem by encouraging shaming. Perhaps instead of shaming, we let what we see or read cause us to pause and reflect and maybe see a bit of ourselves. Perhaps remembering that we too make mistakes, that we too were ignorant or uninformed about things at one time or another. Because as Sam Lamont said, the best way to teach is with love and patience. An amazing example of that occurred last week. I was blown away by the response of the families of the folks who were murdered in Charleston by white supremacist Dylan Roth. When facing him in court, instead of reacting with hate and resentment and anger, they responded to him with love and forgiveness. To me, this was profound and took great compassion. It must have come from a well of huge love, maybe for each other, maybe for God, maybe for the ones that they lost. I don't know. But that love, it honored those who died, and it honored those who offered it. And we see that it's true. Love only creates more love. Hate only creates more hate. In all that we do, we can choose love. So I ask you, what do you want to create? Every time you click or like or tweet or turn on your TV? Because here's the thing. If we can't be someone who's willing to see another fully and accept them for who they are, how do we ever expect them to do the same for us? How can we ever bring our own shame out into the light when we are shaming others for their mistakes? It's in the speaking and the sharing of our hearts that make us human. It's in the holding of one another in compassion and love that heals our pain. So let's choose to treat one another with empathy and open hearts. This is the hard part of loving, but it's part of loving that we all need. May it be so.